It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Welcome everyone to the Liverpool.com podcast. I'm your host David Comerford and I'm joined once again in our Liverpool City Centre studio by the Liverpool.com editor Matt Addison. And in today's episode we're going to take a deep dive on Alexis McAllister, who was signed in the summer for about £35 million from Brighton. And like Dominic Szoboszlai, he started every Premier League game for Liverpool since he arrived. But it's probably fair to say it's been a little bit more of a mixed bag for him for various reasons. So Matt, just to kick us off on this one, I'll ask you a pretty straightforward question. How would you rate McAllister's start to life at Anfield out of 10?
Well, you say a straightforward question. I had a little look at the agenda last night and I was trying to come up with a number. I think it's so hard to judge in terms of, you know, how good he is in terms of his start, because he's not playing in his position, as we'll come to. He struggled a little bit at times. I think he's looked good in other games as well. So look, it's been a mixed bag. He'd probably maybe go for a 6 or a 7, maybe, if you're being generous. But it's one of those where I'm judging him, but I don't really want to judge him just yet, because we know that he's not really doing the job that he was asked to do when he was brought in.
So if we're talking about a score and you're saying sort of 6 or 7, I mean, to what extent are you kind of factoring in the fact that he's not in his you know, favourite position? Because you could say, in the circumstances, maybe it's been a 7, but sort of overall, it's maybe closer to a 5 in terms of his actual performance levels. I mean, he is a number 8. He's being asked to play as a number 6. I mean, how much is that colouring your perception of him at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, that is how I'm going to judge him, because he's much better further forward. We knew that. That was what he expected when he came in. I think you've got to take that into account for sure. In terms of his actual performances as a number 6, as we'll come to, the other option is Wataru Endo. I'm not massively convinced on what we've seen of him. I still think McAllister, even though he's not great in this position, is better as an option. I also think he's better than Fabinho was for much of last season, probably the whole of last season. You know, there's one or two issues with McAllister in that position, but I don't think it's anything new for Liverpool in terms of that role. I think Fabinho, for the majority of last season, didn't look particularly quick on the turn, wasn't necessarily in the perfect positions, was maybe throwing himself into tackles and getting yellow cards when he didn't need to. So those are the issues. I still think Liverpool have improved on what they had last season. It's just not what we thought they were going to be when, you know, they made a British record bid for Moises Caicedo. They've been in for Tchouaméni in the past. They clearly want someone who is elite in that level, in that position. He isn't ever going to be at that level because it's not his role. But I think you can kind of only do what you can do. If you're him, that's the role that he's going to play. There's probably an argument that it's worked out all right for him, because I don't necessarily think he'd be getting in the team ahead of Curtis Jones and Dominic Szoboszlai. So it's a hard one, but I think if you asked him, he'd probably just say, maybe let's judge me in a few months when there's somebody else who can play there and he can play a little bit further forward.
Yeah, we'll definitely revisit that question about Curtis Jones a little bit later on. And I mean, the whole sort of context of this podcast, I suppose, is we're talking, you know, 8 games into the Premier League season, a few games in cup competitions, you know, where it's still very early to be judging a new signing. But I think McAllister is still a, you know, particularly intriguing case because of this sort of positional discussion that's going on. And I think you make quite an important point as well about Fabinho, because McAllister, I believe, came in sort of mid-June, I think it was. He was very early through the door. And at that point, Fabinho was not only at Liverpool, but we thought he was going to stay. You know, we thought the club's sort of policy was, let's give him another chance. Then this bid comes in from Al Ittihad of about 40 million. And they, well, we've got to take that. You know, he's 29 years old. We're not 100% sure about him anymore. And that kind of changes things around. So I think he's come in expecting to play as a number eight. Jürgen Klopp probably expected him to play as a number eight. And linking into that, before the game against Brighton last weekend, Klopp said that he took a guess that McAllister could play the role. So he kind of had to look for a solution. I mean, you mentioned Caicedo there. I wonder what kind of conversation we're having now if he was playing alongside Caicedo, because he's got that obviously established dynamic there. That's obviously an alternative sort of version of history at this point. But so Klopp said he guessed that McAllister could do the role. That's where he sort of slotted him into the team. And he also said that if we as a team defend well, he can definitely play the six. Would you agree with that? And is that why you think, based on your first answer anyway, that he is a viable solution in that number six role?
Yeah, so I think we saw this perfectly against Aston Villa, where that was a team where we expected Liverpool would probably have to struggle a bit more than what they did. We thought they'd maybe probably have a little bit less of the ball than what they ended up having, but that was a perfect example, really, of you almost make it so dominant that you don't have to do the defending. You don't lose the ball as they did at the weekend with Van Dijk trying to pass it to him and, you know, Brighton nick in and get it. If you are in complete control, he's a perfect option to play there, because we know how good he is on the ball, how, you know, his ability to dictate things and to progress the ball is really impressive. He's got two players in front of him that are perfect for that as well. So I think against the vast majority of Premier League teams, home and away, you can play him and it's absolutely fine. The difference comes when it's Brighton away or it's Man City away or whatever it might be. One of the better sides, Arsenal, probably to some extent a Manchester United, depending on how they play. You know, there's very few sides, I think, where this doesn't work. So for the majority of the games, and let's not forget, the majority of the games last season that Liverpool dropped points in did tend to be against the lesser opponents. Yeah. So I think for 75, 80%, maybe even a little bit more of this season, McAllister in the six works perfectly. It works as it has against, you know, an Aston Villa when Liverpool are at the best, everyone's up to speed. Mm. You know, we have to remember that the Villa game was really good, but it, you know, it's early in the season. There's still players getting used to how each other play. To see that at that point, I think, is probably a sign of what it can be in the future. But I think that's how it has to be if you're going to play him there. The difference and why Liverpool wanted Caicedo, I think, is more the bigger games that might decide a title. You know, you can beat the bottom 14 home and away and get into the top four, but it's that next step then to go on and challenge Manchester City and, let's be honest, probably get close to 100 points to win the league. That's the difference, I think, between McAllister takes you a level up on what it was last season, but he maybe doesn't take you the next level to go and win the league.
Yeah, and I suppose that is the crux of it. You know, he has had good games so far, but is it a viable solution over a full season? I would sort of be a little bit, you know, cooler on him playing the position generally than you, I think, Matt, because there's just a few things that I've sort of seen in these first sort of eight Premier League games that look a little bit sort of off to me. And I think one of them is the amount of fouls that McAllister's making. So, you know, you mentioned Fabinho earlier. One similarity between the two players that they're right up there in the Premier League for total fouls. So I think McAllister has made 16 so far, and only four players in the Premier League have made more. And he's also only two yellow cards away from a suspension, and he's got 11 games to get through without that. And to me, I'm looking at that and saying there's a couple of reasons. One of them is that he's not necessarily, you know, proactive in defusing danger, so he's having to react, and that often means just bringing someone down. I think maybe there's questions about the physicality there as well, in terms of when sort of midfielders are running at him, does he have kind of the speed and the strength that he needs to stop them fairly? And maybe just something as simple as the timing of a tackle as well, which something Fabinho in his prime was certainly very good at. I'm not sure McAllister has that to the same extent, and I'm not criticising him for that, because he, you know, has specialised in this number eight position, and they're all kind of number six skills, basically. So we didn't expect to have to be tapping into, you know, those attributes, I suppose. And I just don't think that he's fully got the awareness of danger that you need. And I remember, and it does kind of feed into your point, Matt, about it being one of the better teams, but on the first game of the season against Chelsea, there was a couple of instances where McAllister was sort of watching the ball and there were people running off his shoulder, and alarm bells were probably ringing at that point, just to think to yourself, hang on, does he actually have sort of the awareness that he needs to play the position? And, you know, I think another thing that Klopp said was that sort of, you know, with defending as a team, it's fine. He does have Soboslai and Jones in front of him, to be fair, I've got through a phenomenal amount of work so far. in front of him, which they didn't really have last season. With I mean, if you think back to the game against Brighton, I think the midfield last year was Fabinho, Henderson, Oxlade-Chamberlain, and Thiago. So if you're Fabinho at the base of that midfield, you know, you're gulping before that game, basically saying, you know, that those players in front of you, I suppose. But it's different now. But I just think in any game, and you can probably point to an example in each match so far, there's going to be situations where the number six needs to be like a firefighter, basically. And granted, Liverpool's record is good with McAllister, and maybe that kind of counteracts what I'm saying, in the sense that they can manage without it. But it just feels like, you know, you mentioned being able to hoover up the points against the weaker teams and maybe struggling more against the top sides. I just worry that there's going to be certain games with McAllister, you know, as that six, where Liverpool are caught out, and not through his sort of own fault, really, just because he doesn't have that those instincts that maybe a Fabinho would have done.
That only works when Liverpool play well. If Liverpool don't play well and it's a weaker side, you can still get punished. I think there's enough quality even at the bottom of the league where there might be an odd game. You know, a few years ago it would have been, you know, a classic Zaha for Palace or something like that. It would be a case of targeting certain areas, and maybe teams will look at that and think that that's an area that you can get at Liverpool. But I think in the majority of games it'll probably be okay. But let me be clear, I'd much rather have, you know, a Moises Caicedo type player in that position, because it A is an upgrade, but B allows him to play in his better role as well. So it's a bit of a stopgap. It's a bit of he can do it, but we know that there's an alternative, and I'd be surprised if in the next sort of year or so Liverpool didn't go out and get a proper, you know, having put the money on the table and been prepared to do it for other players as well. I think, you know, it's got to be, along with centre-back, the next priority, I think, in terms of what Liverpool go and get.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
And just to go slightly off piece here for a second, I mean, if you look at Manchester City, Rodri's obviously just been suspended. They lost all three games. I think it's the first time they lost back-to-back Prem games for 5 years. Yeah. And people said before the injury that Rodri was the most important player. And I think now that's pretty much been confirmed by what we've seen. And you mentioned sort of it being an important task for next year as well in the transfer market. I mean, part of me thought, we see so many evolutions in the Premier League, especially in recent years. It feels like the game has really come on a lot. You know, Guardiola and Klopp mostly, maybe a little bit of Arteta now and things like that, where the role of different players changes. I mean, you know, you look at how fullbacks are now expected to play like wingers, for example, and things like that. I thought to myself, maybe there's a scenario where, hang on, you actually do start playing with a number six like McAllister. Maybe that is going to be a new way forward type thing, where it doesn't necessarily need to be a pure destroyer. Maybe more teams will move towards that kind of, just, you know, that ball player, if you like. But looking at what's happened with Rodri, is there an argument that, you know, a number six who's sort of complete, who can do the gritty defensive side but also kind of progress the ball really well, is that potentially the most important position of all of them, really, within the modern game? Because I think you can make the case that obviously every single position is significant, but that one feels like it's got sort of another dimension to it.
Yeah, I think you can definitely make the argument. I think it's probably the most important because it's the most difficult. I think there's probably two or three positions across the pitch where Liverpool ask one player to basically do the job of two. So Trent would be one in terms of moving inside, and then the right-sided centre-back has to do a bit of right-back as well as a result. But I think the number six is one as well where, you know, 10, 15 years ago we would have seen always two players in front of the back four. What Rodri can do, what Fabinho did at his best, is basically just do that in one. I think Declan Rice will end up doing that for Arsenal. That's the level of player that we're talking about. And I think it's easy to criticise Liverpool for not having a plan, but they weren't expecting to lose Fabinho and Henderson. They did try and get Caicedo. There's probably no one else that realistically is of that level that they could have gone and got. You know, I can't think of a name. Tchouaméni obviously chose Real Madrid a year later. Is still there, and you know, how long? For potentially could be the next 10 years he might decide to move, and maybe he becomes an option again. But I don't think there's not another Rodri on the market that you can go and get. So then it's a case of finding different solutions. I'm glad they got Endo in terms of getting someone in, but I'm not convinced that he's going to be a regular Premier League player. He's not going to be someone who comes in for these big games. I think there's maybe an argument that you maybe put him and McAllister together and you make them do it as a two, because maybe between them they've got the skills to do that. But then obviously you lose a player a little bit further forward, it changes the way that you play. So there's no obvious solution until Liverpool can identify someone who is of the very elite level on the transfer market. Then I'm not quite sure what the solution is, other than to just go with McAllister, because I think he's maybe the best option they've got. But it's definitely important to sort it out. It's just, you know, it's easy to look at that and go, well, there's an obvious gap there. We know that because they've bid, you know, an unprecedented amount for Caicedo. Who is it that they go and get? I'm not too sure.
Yeah, and I think we'll come on to maybe that possible combination with Endo in a second. And you reminded me of a line, I think David Lynch reported it during the summer. He said that Liverpool sources were basically pointing out, when they were briefing journalists, that in their eyes there was a lack of pre-peak, you know, top quality number sixes on the market. And obviously the two outstanding ones are Rice and Caicedo. They went for Caicedo, didn't get him, maybe went a little bit late there in terms of putting the groundwork in. Rice obviously was always kind of Arsenal v Man City for him, you know, Arsenal were the favourites obviously from the outset on that one. And then to be fair, there are sort of quite a few towards the other end of the scale who maybe Liverpool could have gone with, would have been a bit imperfect. And then I suppose the question you ask as a fan then is, was there anyone in the middle who would have kind of been a suitable option? Will Liverpool allow imperfect to be the enemy of good again, type thing? And maybe that is more so a discussion for the end of the season.
Jake Decore, for example.
Yeah, again, like he is probably a solid player, but you know, 70 million, for example, like, is that the kind of deal that, you know, proves Liverpool's points in a way? Because, you know, it would have been an all right solution, but for that price tag, I mean, obviously Rice and Caicedo inflated the markets, I guess. But just to bring it back to McAllister more specifically then, all the weaknesses I talked about previously were sort of, you know, off the ball, which you'd expect most of all for a number eight transitioning back into that number six position. But have you been a little bit maybe underwhelmed by what you've seen from him in possession as well? Because for me personally, I thought that was his biggest strength, but I think there's been, you know, some good moments obviously, but also maybe a few uncharacteristic mistakes on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I wonder whether that's just because of his positioning. I think if you have him a little bit further up the pitch and he's the one making the pass that Szoboszlai or Curtis Jones may be playing into the front three, maybe we see a little bit more from that side of it. I know what you mean though. I think he's the kind of player that is a little bit like a Thiago, that you'd expect would be able to just drop into any of the midfield positions and be able to progress it. Maybe we haven't quite seen that yet, but I don't know, it's still early, I think, to be judging that. And again, I'd make the same point of, you know, it's not his position, it's not something he's used to. I know he's done it a little bit for Brighton, but that was more of a two with him and Caicedo, so maybe he's just getting used to the way that Liverpool play. And to be fair, so is Szoboszlai in front of him. Obviously Curtis Jones knows exactly how to play it, but I think there's definitely an argument that the more that they play together, the more of that we'll see. But there's more to come, I think, from him, but it's not something that's stood out as being worrying. I'm far more worried about runners off him, not being able to sort of be quick on the turn, things like that. I think the on-ball stuff, I think, eventually will just take care of itself.
Yeah, and I think just from watching, there's just been a few moments where it's been sloppy, really, just in terms of, you know, sometimes to be passes going out of play, giving the ball away, things like that. And again, I agree with you, Matt, that's probably going to be something that he irons out in time. I think you make a decent point as well in terms of it's a different kind of pass he's having to play. You know, when he's in that number eight position, it was maybe more kind of the short forward passes or the little combinations and things like that, which are maybe more his game than kind of launching the attack by playing a pass through midfield, for example.
It's maybe a little bit more instinctive as well when you're in those areas. I think when you kind of, you've got a few more seconds when you take the ball off a centre back or something like that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he'd be able to explain it far better than I would in terms of being in those positions. But to me, that maybe feels a little bit different as well. If you've just kind of got one touch and then you play it to the front three, that's a very different skill, I think, to, you know, a Trent type player where you put your foot on the ball, you're looking, and then you're pinging a 50-yard ball, or you're making the right choice. I think it might only be 20 yards different on the pitch, but it is a very different pass that you are trying to play.
Yeah, because you're facing sort of an opposition in a completely different phase and a different sort of area of the pitch. So it does make a difference, that. And I think if he does continue in the deep role, it's something that he's going to have to adjust to. And we'll see, obviously, if he moves forward. But I do wonder as well if, you know, in addition to the kind of tactical side, if there was a tiny bit of a lack of confidence from him, or maybe just kind of adjusting to the spotlight of playing for a team like Liverpool, just in terms of making maybe one or two. I mean, we're not talking about a huge amount of bad passes here, but I think when I looked earlier in the season, and he has improved in this regard, but when I looked earlier in the season, I think he was bottom of Liverpool's regular midfielders for passing accuracy, and that's not the kind of thing you'd expect. But I suppose, you know, sometimes it can be a confidence issue as well, yeah, in terms of the way he's playing. The reason we're kind of doing this podcast is because McAllister struggled against Brighton at the weekend. I think most people would accept that. But we shouldn't, just because of that, overlook the positive side of things as well. And if we're going to make this a balanced episode, we will have to look at kind of the things that have been good so far. So what have been the main sources of encouragement that you've seen in these first couple of months of McAllister?
I mean, it's hard to bring up anything new that we've not talked about in terms of the negatives and trying to counter those things. I think there's definitely a really good player there. There's a really intelligent footballer. He's not the quickest, but I don't think that particularly matters. He's not the most physical, but he's a different kind of midfielder. We can't compare him to a Wijnaldum or a Henderson. Liverpool's midfield is just different now. I like what I've seen in terms of the glimpses of what we could see from him, but I don't think I'll ever be, you know, 100% excited about him until we see him a little bit further forward. You know, you look at the options Liverpool have got there. We've not mentioned Gravenberch, but you've got him, Szoboszlai, Jones, McAllister. If Liverpool can get a proper player to sit in behind those, you know, whatever combination of those players, I mean, what a midfield that's going to be. I think, as I said before, but for three quarters or more of this season, Jones, McAllister, Szoboszlai, that's a fine midfield. That works. It will get them to a certain level. But, you know, if you can have somebody to come in and play as the six, and then you can rotate Jones and McAllister, Szoboszlai and Gravenberch, I mean, that's a midfield that is set up to be exactly what Liverpool are looking for the next 10 years. So what am I excited about so far is almost
the future.
A completely different role, a completely different position for him. I've seen enough, not obviously just for Liverpool, but for Brighton as well, what we saw at the World Cup. There's clearly a brilliant footballer in there, but I just think he needs to be allowed to take that next step by playing a slightly different role. And I just think the only way that you do that is to bring somebody in to play the position that he's having to fill in right now, unless Stefan Bajcetic can get to that level. But I don't want to put too much pressure on him. He's still very young. Coming back from the injury, it might be another, you know, couple of years before he gets over the injury and gets back to the form. It's not something that you can kind of hang your hat on. And even if he was back at 100% fitness, I wouldn't want to play him every week anyway. I think you've still got to be really careful with him. So for me, the answer is the transfer market, which I'm sure a lot of our listeners will be delighted about.
Yeah, and I think I was, you know, also really excited when he arrived. I mean, especially for the price tag, it looked a lot like I had signing of the summer potential. And I think, you know, as much as so far it's been a mixed bag, like I said, right at the top, I don't have any concerns about this signing going forward, especially because I do think that if it doesn't work as a number six, he will just be moved forward. Like, it's not like he's locked into this position, definitely. And another player I mentioned right at the start, I mean, Szoboszlai, in a way, you maybe do feel for McAllister, because Szoboszlai has probably been one of the fastest starting players we've seen Klopp sign, you could argue. And obviously, to be played, you know, he's also been in the team a lot, so he's kind of compared directly to him. Maybe McAllister, it's actually a little bit natural to start like this. I mean, we've seen, remember when Fabinho came in, he wasn't even starting games until about October or something like that.
It's so, a lot easier to stand out as Szoboszlai rather than McAllister.
Yeah,
I think McAllister, every mistake is going to be magnified, where, you know, Szoboszlai can lash one over the top from 40 yards and everyone just goes, oh, he's good at shooting, isn't he? there's still improvements from him. Obviously, both of the starts have been very different. Obviously, Szoboszlai has been better so far, but I think if McAllister had played the same position as him, maybe we'd be, you know, having a slightly different conversation about him as well.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, definitely. And just to tie it up with some more kind of positive things, I think there's been two standout moments of real quality from McAllister. I think there was the first game of the season against Chelsea where he launches the pass down the wing for Salah. Salah crosses it in for Diaz and Liverpool score. So that, you know, it's a pre-assist in his first game, brilliant pass. And then he gets his actual first assist for Darwin Nunez against West Ham with a brilliant sort of chipped ball from midfield. So those are the kind of glimpses that you really want to look at, I think, in terms of being optimistic about the future. And then, you know, something a bit more subtle. I think Andrew Beasley from Liverpool.com pointed this out on Twitter the other day. He made more interceptions against Brighton than any Liverpool player had in a Premier League game since Fabinho against Leicester in February 2022. So you're going back like about 60 games-ish there. And that to me shows that, not so much kind of breaking things up in his own half, but knowing where to position himself to sustain that Liverpool high press, really, I think is the important thing there. And the best example of that is when Dunk, I think, cleared it from sort of, you know, the bottom left-hand corner of the pitch and McAllister was there to intercept it. He plays it onto Szoboszlai and then Liverpool kind of have a goal-scoring attack off that. I think it's Salah's equaliser in the game. And yeah, he's up there in the Premier League for interceptions as well. So I think that's one area where you could say his reading of the game has been quite strong and his tactical understanding and things like that. So
he's a lot more proactive than what Fabinho was last season. You know, we kind of think of Fabinho as peak Fabinho, but that was a long time ago now. So yeah, he's not perfect, McAllister, but I think he's a level up on what Liverpool had in that position last season, even if it's not, you know, the level that you'd probably want long term.
Yeah, I mean, if you're comparing him to a sort of 2019 Fabinho, he's always going to struggle to live up to that standard, definitely. But certainly, it's interesting to think what Fabinho would have been like within this midfield. Would it have been the player who's in the Saudi Pro League walking around? Yeah. Or would it have been a player who's kind of revitalised by having that, you know, improved protection in front of him, both in terms of energy levels and also, you know, the structure being a little bit better as well? But last couple of sort of discussion points then, Matt. I mean, a lot of fans on social media are calling for Klopp to bring in Wataru Endo now. Obviously, the very next game is against Everton. And interestingly, McAllister is going to be returning late again from international duty. And last time it didn't go very well when Klopp tried to use him from the off against Wolves. So do you think it is time now to give Endo a chance? And just touching on what you said earlier, could the template going forward to be sort of Endo and McAllister as a midfield too? Because obviously if you do that, then you've got to bring out one of the players in front of him who've been quite impressive so far.
Yeah. Well, firstly on Endo, I'm not sure that he is ever going to be a Premier League player for Liverpool regularly. That's not to sort of downplay him in terms of his ability and, you know, what he can offer Liverpool. I think there's been a lot of excitement based on what we've seen in the Europa League and, you know, for probably half a game against Leicester, who are Leicester, but they are a Championship side. They're not, you know, they're not a great team in terms of needing to, you know, take it up a level, essentially. I'd be worried about him. I wouldn't have started him. I think it was probably telling that Jurgen Klopp didn't even bring him on against Brighton, even though McAllister was struggling. He didn't turn to him. I've got concerns about his mobility. I think we saw that pretty much straight away when he came on. He was, you know, shuttling about the pitch, but not particularly, you know, quick or, you know, he's not particularly good on the turn, I don't think. He's a player that has got certain qualities that you'd want from that position, but I don't think he can really hold things together on his own. He's certainly not as good on the ball as what McAllister is. He can get himself into defensive positions, but even then, I mean, there's been three or four times where Jurgen Klopp's been screaming at him because he's just gone for a run up the pitch and has found himself on the edge of the box, and then he can't get back quick enough. So, you know, if you're doing that against Leicester in the Carabao Cup, it's one thing. If you're doing that, you know, against Brighton or, you know, whoever it might be in the Premier League, I think there might be a bit more of an exposure of a few weaknesses that he's got. There's a reason that he's played for Stuttgart for as long as he has. There's a reason that Liverpool have not looked to buy him before, despite their need for a midfielder. Yeah. He's not the perfect option. I think he's more of a Milner type option, where you bring him in a little bit, you might bring him off the bench for 10 minutes, you might use him in the cups, you might use him in the Europa League at certain points, but I don't see him being a solution in the Premier League. The only way that he could potentially be is if you play him in a two. I've not seen him for Stuttgart. I'd never heard of him when Liverpool signed him, but I assume that they probably played in a two. He probably wasn't being asked to do what, you know, peak Fabinho or Rodri can do and do that role on their own. And again, that's no slight on him, because clearly McAllister can't do it to that level either. So, you know, he's not as good a footballer, so you wouldn't expect that. But maybe there's a solution where you play the two of them together, but then it's, you know, who do you take out of the team in front? I wouldn't really want to bring Endo in to do that at the expense of Curtis Jones or Szoboszlai. I don't really see that as being a solution. You've also got loads of other options who can play there. You then have two out of Jones, Szoboszlai and Gravenberch on the bench, which it doesn't feel the best balance or the best use of the squad to have more of those attacking options on the bench than on the pitch. So there's no obvious solution. The one thing I would say is I don't think it's one where he just swaps out McAllister for Endo. I don't think that solves it. I'm just not quite convinced yet. I still think McAllister is, you know, the best option that Liverpool have got, even though he's not perfect. It might just be what they have to go with for now.
Yeah, and the thing that surprises me with Endo is, you know, he started against Newcastle, which was about a week after he came in. And I wonder if Klopp, obviously that game was a bit strange, but I wonder if Klopp almost took a look at him there and thought, hang on, maybe he needs a bit more time.
Yeah.
But for him to have played one of the seven, certainly from the start, one of the seven Premier League games which he's been available, is a surprise to me. And even though he is, you know, a player who doesn't have that much pedigree at club level and came in for a relatively low price tag and he's 30, things like that, I did think he was going to be used more, just because, I mean, if you look at some of the things Klopp said about him in the summer, he said, have a look because he's a really good player, kind of give him a chance type thing. He was always on my list. We just don't usually sign players from this age group. He will show how good he is on the pitch. And this was the kind of message of, you might not be inspired by the signing, but watch, you know, when he plays, you're actually going to be quite impressed by him.
I wonder whether that was more a, we've just missed out on Moises Caicedo and Romeo Lavia. We've got this lad, so you're going to have to just sort of put up with it type thing.
Yeah.
Maybe that's me being a little bit cynical, but I wonder to what extent really he was, you know, he's never been one that's been listed as someone that Liverpool have looked at before. And Jurgen Klopp's been at Liverpool long enough that he could have signed a 25, 26-year-old Endo, but he chose not to. So I don't know whether I buy that necessarily, but I know where you're coming from. He's clearly a good enough player to be a squad player for Liverpool, but I just don't think he's the solution that they're looking for at the moment.
I take your point on that, definitely. I just think that because it was such a, you know, it was a Klopp signing, basically, part of me thought he was going to kind of just throw him in a little bit more, especially in light of obviously what we've seen with maybe the balance not being quite right. And on the point about balance, I mean, there was somebody on Twitter, Dan Kenneth, made the point after the game against Brighton, likening it to the situation with the centre-backs in the 2021 season, when Klopp basically admitted that he should have played Williams and Phillips earlier, because even though they were obviously limited as players, it meant that basically the identity of the team could be restored. The midfielders could actually play in midfield. And when they came into the team at the end of the season, Liverpool, I think we had sort of maybe one of the best runs of form of anybody in the league, even with all the injuries they had. So kind of, obviously Endo is much better player than those two, but on a similar theme, is there an argument that Endo might actually be, of the whole midfield group, he might be sort of the weakest player, maybe by set aside, just because he's young. But in terms of the structure and balance of the team and getting McAllister into his best position, are Liverpool potentially a better team with Endo, even if Endo individually isn't, you know, sort of on the level of some of the other players?
I can see that to a point, but I think the key difference here is that we were talking about Fabinho and Henderson playing centre-back, and therefore they couldn't play in midfield, and so Liverpool were weak in midfield as well. And only when Williams and Phillips came in were they allowed to go back and play in the normal position. I think the difference here is that Liverpool are not desperately crying out for McAllister to play further forward, because they've got the other three options that can do that. They've got Harvey Elliott as well. They've got loads of options who can play McAllister's best role. It's more, you might get a benefit in terms of having a more natural number six, but you don't get the double benefit of also then having McAllister further forward, because even if you pick McAllister further forward, that means you don't have Curtis Jones. So I think Liverpool really missed when he was suspended for the weekend's game. So it's not quite the same, I don't think, for me. And for all the reasons I've just explained, that I'm not convinced that Endo is a better option as a six than McAllister is. There might be certain things that he's better at, but I think there's certainly more things that he's not quite as good at that would soon become exposed. Having said that, Everton next, they're not massively different in quality to a Leicester or a team like that. There's a run of games now where Liverpool play, I can't remember the order, but Everton, Forest, Luton, those are the teams where if you are going to try Endo in that position and you are going to put him into the team, you do it then. And if he can do it, maybe that's the level that he can do it against. If you throw him in against Everton, it's a big one, but you know, maybe you put him in against Luton and you see what happens. If it doesn't work, you can swap and try something different. But you know, for all of what I've said about not wanting to try it, if they are going to try it, I think it's got to be after this international break. There's a run of games now where it makes sense, as much as it ever will do, to try that and just see what happens.
And not just in terms of the fixtures, but also the fact that McAllister's playing in the early hours of Wednesday morning next week. So he's probably going to be able to train once before the game. I mean, Endo might start anyway. So let's say Endo has a really good game in the derby, keeps his place in the side, and then we're getting to, I think the game after that is Nottingham Forest at home. So we get to that game and Endo's played really well. McAllister's ready to come back into the Premier League starting 11. But Klopp wants to keep Endo in the team. I mean, if we were to put Endo in now, are we looking at a situation where McAllister would actually have a big fight on his hands, weirdly, to actually be starting ahead of Curtis Jones? Is it maybe proven to be a slight blessing in a weird way that McAllister has played deeper? Because it's not only meant that Jones can play, but it's meant, you know, both of them can be in the team at the same time.
Yeah, I think obviously Jones will be suspended for a couple of games, so there's maybe a bit of an easier route into it there, and he can play the midweek games in between. But as soon as he's back, I think he's one of the first names on my team sheet at the moment. I don't think, if it came down to, we're going to play Endo, so who do you want to the left of him? Is it Jones or McAllister? Obviously, you know, McAllister, we've not really had a chance to see in that position, but I don't see anybody being ahead of Curtis Jones in that role at the moment. I think we saw it loads against Brighton, where Liverpool missed him in terms of just the quiet things that he does, being able to win the ball back, the pressing, the, you know, complete knowledge of that system. He's basically played that role now for 2 or 3 years. He's been learning, you know, even when he's been injured, he's been training in that position, he's been learning that role, he's been taught how to do it. You know, McAllister doesn't have that, as good a player as he is. Right now, for me, it would be, you know, if McAllister doesn't play six, I don't think he plays in the first choice midfield for the biggest game of that week. And that's not a bad thing. He might play as an eight in, you know, a Carabao Cup game or, you know, a Europa League group match or whatever. But I don't think, if McAllister, if the decision is McAllister has to move out of the number six, which wouldn't be my call, but if it was, I think that means he goes to the bench rather than moves further forward.
Yeah, and I think one thing that suits McAllister really is that, I think Klopp's made this point as well, his tactical intelligence, I think it is quite high. I think it's, you know, he's sort of above average for that. So I think that if it does become a thing where he is battling with Jones for that position, which would be a really interesting fight between those two, you know, I think what you say about him adjusting to the position, obviously it would take time, but I think he could probably do that slightly quicker than maybe some other players could.
It doesn't have to be one or the other as well. I mean, we've got this in the front line, haven't we, where you can have an hour of Luis Diaz and then bring on Diogo Jota.
Yeah.
If you're going to have that where you have an hour of Jones and then you have half an hour of McAllister, I mean, I wouldn't say no to that.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of different combinations that get tried over the course of the season, just with the amount of games that Liverpool have and rotation and things like that. But yeah, we will leave it there for this episode. Thanks very much, everyone, for listening. Remember to check out all the written content that goes up on Liverpool.com over the international break. I promise we will still have a lot of interesting articles going up for you, even though there aren't any games on. And remember to obviously follow everything that's going up on Blood Red as well. We'll be back next week with another edition of the podcast. So yeah, we will see you then.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.